This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek's show number 680 with guest Gavin Campbell, recorded on June 4th, 2026. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way in your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios. Here in a beautiful, the grass is green, the mowers are out, not a robot lawnmower. Gavin, how's your robot lawnmower doing up there in
Doing
Canada?
Doing good. It's been out. I pretty much send it out every few days. I still only have it mapped to the backyard for some reason. I think this weekend I'll start mapping it towards the front and stuff like
that. So you hand mow in the front then? Or is it just not?
It can mow in the front. I just haven't mapped it yet because we have a gate between the back and the front. And I just don't want to have to go and take it into the front and stuff.
And you got a Segway, I like right? You got a Segway?
Yes.
And does will that thing take hills pretty well? I've seen those on it. Listen, I've been looking since mowing season. Every weekend, I'm like, I'm getting a freaking mower. You know, I don't want to mow anymore.
It does. The one I have does hills pretty well, and I don't even have the advanced version. But the ones they released this year actually handle hills so much better. Yeah. And not just by traction, but they'll look at the hill and they'll map out a path to go along that hill. So it's not going straight up the hill. Yeah. It could go diagonal or side to side. So that works its way up. So it's pretty cool.
I need to get one. I don't know why I'm so slow, except on OpenClaw, but I'm so slow to adopt these technologies. And it's so funny. It's just because I'm cheap. You know, I go to buy one of those things and it starts $2,000, you know, and you're kind of like,
I know what you mean. I predicted this year they'd become a little more mainstream and you'll start seeing them on the shelves and stores and stuff. And I see that happening.
Yeah.
And even like walking through the neighborhood, I've seen others with them.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not the only one now, you know. So
I haven't seen one at all in my neighborhood now. But I'm a neighborhood of a bunch of old guys who have riding lawnmowers. right, you know, they're these kind that are back and forth and they're not gonna go robot.
Those look like fun.
I have one big hill. It's pretty steep. So this is the always thing. I'm always like, well, gonna have to get a tracked version or one of the wide wheel ones so it can make it up the hill for these kinds of things. And then I think, just mow the lawn. So anyway.
Well, another way I look at it too is even if you don't map it out to do the hill, map it out to do everything else. And then while it's doing the other stuff, you just go out there and mow the hill and trim
around. It's all or nothing, friend. It's all or nothing. I'm not a guy that does anything like partial. I'm all the way, as you're gonna hear here in a few minutes. I'm all the way in. We post a show with world-class show notes, and there'll be a few on this one. I'm the average guy. These will be AI-aided show notes on this one. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. If you haven't joined the team yet, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. One plan, $5, 1 month, as long as you want. Many of you keep doing it. Thank you for doing it. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining us on Patreon. Appreciate it. And then if you want to use the affiliate link over there on the site, theaverageguy.tv, upper right-hand corner, just click through. It'll take you to Amazon. All works in our favor, so thanks for doing that. You already heard from Gavin. We were talking about lawnmowers, but Gavin, the topic of the day, and I was excited. Hopefully the neighborhood's not burning down back there.
Oh, do you hear that? It's supposed to filter. You see, this hardware is supposed to filter all that out. I live close to a fire station, so those get noisy sometimes. Nah. But the police, I don't know why they're always in the neighborhood now.
Sketchy. Maybe it's time to move to another neighborhood.
Probably.
Maybe OpenClaw can help you decide if you're one.
What neighborhood?
All right, listen, let's get in. We may talk. Listen, if you're not interested in AI and Hermes and OpenClaw and some of those kinds of things, stay around. You may be by the end, right? This has been quite a journey. You lit a fire in me the last time you were on back in March. We asked the question, and actually, you brought OpenClaw up with home automation. I'd been talking about it on Ask the Podcast Coach a couple times. We talked some about it. I had Christian on the next week. Is it safe? And then since then, it has been 24/7 OpenClaw. you lit a fire in me, Gavin, and then you ran. You ran fast. Give me a little update. What's going on in your world around home automation and OpenClaw?
So since we last talked, when we last talked, it was all OpenClaw. But since then, I've actually discovered one called Hermes. And I've kind of like adjusted how I use my agents, what I do with them. When OpenClaw first came out, I installed it and just threw everything at it and was blown away by how well it like figured things out and was able to do things. Like, it was impressive. But since then, in the name of security, which I totally understand, other companies got involved in the code and stuff, and they've been adding more security into it and everything. And the security, unfortunately, also crippled it a bit more too, right? Like, it made it not as good as it used to be. It started failing at a lot of things it was just doing for me, and I would have to go in and constantly fix things, right? And I got to a point where I just got fed up with having to fix OpenClaw. Every update, something else would break, and people would say, well, wait for the next update. Well, the next update would break something else and fix the one thing that was broken. So there's always something broken. And I don't know if you had that same experience.
Oh, for sure. Stuff that breaks. Yeah. But it's early, right? These are early versions of it.
Yeah.
To be clear, so for folks who are jumping in, like, holy crap, they actually got right to it. Let's just say, right, OpenClaw is an AI orchestrator, so is Hermes and all. They act a little bit different, right? You can add as many and do as interact with as many AI models kind of as you want, but they're an orchestrator. You like them because they work well with Home Assistant. And this is kind of where in this audience, a lot of folks use Home Assistant. There's some automation capabilities inside Home Assistant, but man, this unlocks, like, this is crazy the way it unlocks it. OpenClaw, the founder, was quickly gobbled up and is now working for OpenAI. It was going fast until this Hermes product came along. Very similar. How do you see the difference between, you know, OpenClaw is kind of traditional chat to an AI model or various AI models. I've got mine in routers, so I can pick different models at different times for different functions. But how's Hermes different than OpenClaw as far as an orchestrator goes? Or is it the same?
They do pretty much the same thing. But I found with Hermes, it was a lot more reliable. Their release cycles were a lot less. They put more time into thoroughly testing things. And when you got an update, things didn't break like the other way. It was a lot more container friendly. So I run mine in Docker containers on my Unraid box. And with OpenClaw, they have a container, but it also feels very hacked together. In a way, trying to get it to work in the container, where with Hermes, they built it with the container in mind. So it's very container friendly. So I basically have one container for each agent. So I can mess around with one agent and try and get things working and this and that, but I won't break the whole fleet, right? So I like it that way too. So, and it feels faster. It just feels a lot more reliable. I haven't had it go down or stop replying on me or anything like that. So I'm a lot happier with it. It has its moments. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but at least those moments, they had one issue, and within a few minutes in their GitHub, somebody reported the issue. Somebody already had a fix, had a push or a pull to their repo, and I just had to wait for it to update on my Docker, and it was fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I did find Hermes to be a little more developer oriented. Like, I think you need to know a little bit more. OpenClaw, and I'm not a developer, OpenClaw was actually a very friendly experience for me.
Yep.
Not knowing anything about code from the start. Now I've learned a ton about it. Like, in the last 8 weeks, all of a sudden I'm looking at this, I'm like, oh yeah, I know what this stuff is doing now as we think about it. But I found the OpenClaw setup experience a lot easier. Hermes died on me the very first time I started setting up. Now, part of it may have been it was late. You know how you're like, oh, let me give this a try. You can't with these kinds of things. This isn't a 15-minute let me set it up. Gavin, talk a little bit about with Home Assistant. How is this adding? I mean, you were pretty good at Home Assistant before.
Yeah.
Automations and doing some. What's the advantage of using a tool like OpenClaw or Hermes with Home Assistant the way you're using it?
One of the things that helps is just those time suck like type of situations, you know, like making dashboards. You could spend weeks just trying to perfect your dashboard and, you know, and doing all the Jinja code and the placement. And then you get a new device and it's like, in all the dashboards, where do I got to put this? How do I got to present it? Stuff like that. Where now I pretty much tell the agent, hey, go create a dashboard with this on it. And it goes out and it creates a dashboard and then says done in a couple minutes and says, go check it out and tell me if you have any improvements or what would you like to change? And it will just go through and do it all for me. And I love that. Now, wait, OpenClaw, like it's not perfect. OpenClaw actually blew away all my dashboards, right? And the worst part about this, like you said, this was about 12:15 in the morning. Mm-hmm. I was about to go to bed and I just said, one last command. And then all of a sudden my Home Assistant was not loading anymore. And of course I found out it blew away all the dashboards and all it could say to me was my bad. You know, at that point it was like, I was typing bad to it. I was like, hey, you just blew up everything. And he's like, oh yeah, you're right. My bad. I did this and I did that. And you don't have a back. I have backups. Okay. Right. But because I upgraded to a new version of Home Assistant, my backups were for the previous version. So I had to go in. It took me a little more time because I had to go in and downgrade the Home Assistant from the command line. And then I could restore the backup and then restore and then upgrade it again.
Yeah.
So luckily, always back up your stuff. That's important. It saved me because that would have been like a real bad situation if I didn't have a backup. But, you know, and test your backups or understand how they work, you know, because you will run into the situation. So,
yeah. Well, this was one of the problems I experienced that you started. I'm not blaming you, but you started it. So you're like, oh, yeah, I just remember this vividly. Like, yeah, I'm going to use this OpenClaw. I'm going to get started on a Home Assistant. We're going to do all the, that's when I start working. I was like, wait a minute. I've always struggled to build dashboards. I've always struggled to get automations working in Home Assistant. If I could find something that would help me with this, I would love it. And so my very first version of OpenClaw was me trying to go right for the dessert. Like, I wanted to get automations working today. Like, I kind of thought this was going to be me saying three or four words, hey, make some cool stuff. And then OpenClaw, because it had been hyped, like, oh yeah, it'll work all night for you and figure things out and it'll do all this stuff. Well, I mean, it would, but it's also going to use a generous amount of tokens. If you have an API access. Right? So anyways, my experience was, you know what? This is really not any different than the software development experience, which is we still need to practice good software development standards of what are we trying to do here? And let's document it before we start. And then let's baseline some things before we get too far in the process. Is this even a viable thing, right? And then once you have a baseline, this was my problem. I didn't want to wait for a baseline. Like, I was like, okay, you've got it. You've got it. As an example, the weather, right? It only happens every day. You can't make it go any faster. And I was trying to get some things going around with weather alerts, warnings, watches and warnings and kind of thing. I wanted to automate that stuff today. And it was telling me, you know, maybe we should wait. Like, why don't you get a few? This has actually been part of like what you didn't like, where they're locking down OpenClaw a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, okay, OpenClaw is only as smart as the AIs you give it, right? It itself isn't smart, right? It's just a framework. It's an orchestrator for these AIs. What have you been using? How are you paying for this? Like, what have you been using on Hermes or OpenClaw before that? And how have you been connecting it in and paying for it? Because it can get expensive.
It does. What I have settled on now is using the OpenAI Codex, the GPT 5.5. So, and I don't have the expensive things. I have the more, I have the monthly, $20 a month or something like that? Mm-hmm. And I use that. And I haven't hit my limits, but I've also really changed how I use my agents though, right?
Okay.
So, we'll get into that. But like, you know, with Home Assistant, I don't let it really control Home Assistant, but I give my agents access to Home Assistant so they can read the sensors, mm-hmm. right? Because my lawn agent, for example, can read my lawn sensors. And I could tell it to water the zone that it thinks is low and stuff like that, right? Or needs watering and stuff. So using it like that, you don't use up as many tokens. When I want to do real development work, I then load up one of the IDEs or, you know, one of their code or whatever. And I work in there. And that's when you start to really hit your limits with tokens. When it starts writing and testing and editing and fixing, then you hit your limits. So the way I'm using them, I'm not hitting limits anymore until I start doing my coding.
It's easy to at first, right? Attach these things and you're like, oh, and then it just goes and does stuff.
Yeah.
In the Home Assistant space, the Blue Eddy device that I bought, it's an AC180 battery now. So it's one of their older ones. I've had it a couple years now. I could not ever figure out with Home Assistant how to get that thing attached. It takes a special connector in Home Assistant, the HCAS,
the Hack Store.
Right?
Yeah.
And then even with that, I could never get it attached. And all of a sudden I put OpenClaw on the, I'm like, hey, I'm trying to attach this. It's like, it was literally like, hold my beer.
Yeah.
And it was doing some stuff. And I was like, okay, I found this. And I got that, and it's like, oh yeah, it's set up and ready to go. I was like, what? It's like, yeah, these connectors are here, and this is how this works, and this is, we're going to do this thing here, and, you know, Bob's your uncle.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is great. Like, so the promises of it with things like what you're talking about with Home Assistant were pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I do that a lot with things, and I just say, here's the API key to my Unify network, you know? Save it to your tools, because when I ask you questions, you're going to need it to connect in. And I would say, is there anything weird on my network right now? I'm seeing issues here. And it goes in and does all its things and comes back and says, oh, I see this. And I always reiterate, don't make any changes without me approving first, you know?
Yes. Very, very. And I actually hard coded that in to the setup to say, all changes need to be, because I was super paranoid, right? We'd heard these early stories of it taking over and buying things and whatever. By the way, I can't get it to buy anything. Like I've tried. I've been like, hey, and it's like, oh, no, I don't really want to.
I wonder how many people, how many of those are actually real stories or
Do you find, Gavin, like, do you feel like that early hype was maybe a little too much around it being a wild cowboy of like, you know, yeah, and you better lock it down overnight, because overnight it's going to figure out how to weasel its way into your car and then drive it away, right? Do you feel like that is maybe a little overhyped or a little maybe not true?
No, because I think
early versions could do it, maybe?
The early versions were insane. Like when I first got my hands on this, and I just, like I said, I would throw things at it and it would just go and figure it out, right? And I think we were all blown away by what it could do. But like I said, since some of those stories though from back then, I think were maybe for YouTube clicks and stuff like that too. Some people I think took it to a next level. I don't know what to believe, but from my personal experience early on in the days, it was insane. And then as it got more developed and the NVIDIA threw developers at it, they're working on the code, you know, all these companies are in there, and I totally get what they're doing. There's a lot of security holes in it. They have to fix the security. They had to make it safer. You know, it was going crazy out there. There were OpenClaw instances all over the internet that people had access to that was not properly secured. I totally get it. But in the name of security, they've also kind of made it worse, right? I feel. And it just, it kind of got like, you had to baby it more and maybe, you know, convince it a lot more than before.
Yeah. I was telling you in the pre-show as I'm working with it. So the way I've got it set up is I work with my ChatGPT instant, you know, the web version of it. And then I say, hey, I want to do this with OpenClaw. I want you to be my double check on this. So I want to do these things. And sometimes I'll talk to it on my way to work on my phone. So I'll spend half an hour developing the framework. And then take that chat when I get home, bring it up in the web browser and say, okay, let's continue now. And it starts giving me the code to give or the prompts to give OpenClaw. And then OpenClaw runs and then I go back and forth, right? I kind of share them back and forth. So I get some best practices kind of on both sides.
Yes.
I had some of the experiences that you did with what maybe the public did, were doing some wacky things at first. And I realized it was the models, right? If you put cheap, older, local, because I did want to see if I could get my local models working on this. And they do work. But listen, if the model can't think, you're not going to get the super powerful stuff that you're getting, right? You got to kind of pay for the better models to make this thing work, right? Has that been your experience?
Not just the better models, but you got to pay for the hardware to do it, right? Like when you start thinking local models, you're thinking how many tokens per second it can kick out, how fast it can run, because otherwise it'll just chug along. Things like, can it search the internet or is it going only on what it knows? You know, I think if you put it through a Llama, there's plugins or something like that to run it so it can search the internet, but then that slows it down as well too, right? So they have some good, people are always telling me about models that can run locally, but with my hardware, I have a 16 gig T4 in my server, which is a pretty good card. But I need more memory to be able to do the good stuff.
Yeah,
like the models I'm limited to are still, you know, like iffy. So I gave up on the local and I just run it all through Codex now.
Yeah. Well, I have a conspiracy theory for you and I want you to comment on this. I feel like both Hermes and OpenClaw, Hermes, I don't know which one was first. Do you know which one was first? Was OpenClaw first?
I believe it was OpenClaw because Hermes came in as a more slimmed down code base of OpenClaw.
I think they were both designed, or maybe just OpenClaw started this, to just basically burn tokens. So, like, now, just imagine, just go run with me for a second here. So OpenAI is like, hey, we got to start figuring out some ways to get people to use this in more than just a browser, right? And we've got to figure out a way to get people to use an API, use our APIs, so we can charge these big per token type things, right? And yeah, this guy allegedly, I forget his name, did it independently and then was hired by OpenAI. It's a little suspicious to me that these aren't just token burning tools. Like, yeah, they do some cool stuff, but man, they like OpenClaw is so inefficient with the way it uses context and the way it pushes it over to the cloud LLMs. It's a little suspicious. Like, you're like, you probably could have done this with a little less. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Do you think is my conspiracy hold any water, or am I just tinfoil hat on this one?
It's very funny that you say this, actually, because I was complaining about this to somebody the other day. Yeah. I think it's even bigger than OpenClaw and Hermes and stuff like that, right? Because when you're doing coding, even in Claude Code or you're doing in Codex, a lot of tokens are burnt in fixing code that it gave you in the first place. So you say, hey, create this code, and it gives you a function. You're like, great. And you run the function, you're like, it doesn't work. And it goes, oh yeah, my bad. And then it goes off and burns more tokens and comes back with another function. And then you're like, but this thing in the function doesn't work now. And they're like, oh, let me go fix that too. And then it goes off, burns more tokens. And I'm just like, why didn't you just give me the right answer in the first place?
I know.
Right? So that is where I think they are, like, because you don't really have visibility. Like, you do have visibility into it if you chase it down. But at a lot of these companies, they're not watching that. They're just like, it's a free-for-all. They just look at the bill, right? And these developers are going off and they're burning a whole bunch of tokens. And I'd like to see, like, how much percent of that those tokens are being used to fix the code that you gave me in the first place? Because I wouldn't be surprised if 50% of the tokens used are being used to fix the code.
Yeah.
That was given to you. So, I totally agree with you. I think it's much bigger than that.
I've been in the midst of a conversation with the AI And I've been like, hey, I need to do this kind of thing. And in the same answer, it says you could do it this way, but a better way to do it is this way. Like, yeah. I was like, I appreciate you with the code lesson in the middle of this experience. Like, I appreciate you saying this would be a basic way. This is a more advanced way. But I want the, and maybe what we need to say is I don't want options. Make it the very best. You know, I've got a software developer at work who uses it all the time. And he says, you just have to be mean to it.
Yes.
You can't cut it any slack. You need to yell at it. He swears at it constantly. Like, because it otherwise it will get a little loosey goosey. And you're right. It's like, you know, we have these destination places called Dave and Buster's here. I don't know if you have these in Canada.
Right, we now. Have them. Yep.
Yeah. Who knows what those, you know, you get a card, you play these games that are tokens. You bought them for cash, but who knows what they're worth. And then you get these tickets back. It's like reward points. Like, okay, so then they put them on a machine where they weigh them or whatever. And you're like, okay, 5 gets you what? Like, you totally lose track of value in this thing. Right.
Yes.
And so I get a little concerned that I think we gotta be judicious, right? It makes me even more leery as we're thinking about, I mean, Microsoft is talking about embedding Copilot in Windows to do some of this stuff for you. And then you're like, do I got to pay for that? I don't, you know, what are your thoughts about AI embedded in our OS? And then there we have another level to go through to get stuff done. I don't have any thoughts.
It's gonna happen. It's already happening. Did you see the Microsoft keynote this week?
I did not this week. No.
Oh,
too busy on OpenClaw.
I know. So take a look at the keynote because you'll find it very interesting. They had Windows, a lot of Windows talk, but they had the developer of OpenClaw come out on stage, and he talked about they're going to be building OpenClaw into Windows, and they showed what's coming. Very good. They're going to have a lot of lockdown, a lot of settings and stuff like that. Really good. But it's happening. And Microsoft also announced another agent. It's basically their version of an OpenClaw. Like, they're all over the place sometimes because it's like, why are you going to put OpenClaw in there and then throw this other agent in there? But the other agent is more for the enterprise. So you can have it on your work computers and then tell it, hey, go through my emails, go through my Teams, do whatever, and give me a morning briefing so I know where to start. And it would do all that stuff for you. So it's happening, right? It just takes time. We're still early, but it's happening.
I have moved away. This is crazy. My Windows box is actually turned off, and I haven't looked at it in maybe 3 or 4 weeks. Like, it's lately, I have two, this is crazy, I have two Linux machines. Like, what happened to me? Like, why? I mean, certainly the Mac is the everyday driver. But I am doing more on Linux now than I've ever done. And now, okay, I'm using Cinnamon, which is a like a Windows-like, right?
Yes.
By the way, friends, if you want to try Linux out, do use Cinnamon. It's pretty good. Looks just like Windows and acts just like Windows in a lot of way. But I kind of need to, with all these announcements, I kind of need to turn my Windows box back on and start, like, maybe paying attention to the updates. Is that what you're saying? Like,
yeah, well, stuff is coming. Stuff is coming. They're making a big push with a lot of stuff. They had some great announcements this week. I'm a Windows person. I've been using it for many years. And, like, I know people have issues with their Windows machine. My machine just works. It works. I have hardly any issues. The issues I have with my Windows machine is with the third-party developer software.
Yeah,
and they do something weird, and then it will crash on my machine. But I'm also educated enough to say that's not Windows; that was their software, right? Where other people just say, "I hate Windows; it's always crashing." And it's like, no, their software is bad. Have you updated their software to get the new version? Because maybe they fixed it. So yeah, I love my Windows. A lot is coming. They're addressing a lot of pain points, like reboots with patching. They, you know, we just rolled out something called hot patch at work. So now the monthly updates can be applied to a machine and it doesn't need to be rebooted. Right? So we got rid, but it's only part of the solution because it's still got reboot for drivers or .NET updates. Yeah, they still got to work on that stuff. Yeah, they're coming with
painful.
It.
That's a pretty painful. I mean, it's gotten down for the most part in the enterprise. 5 or 6 minutes, right? For the most part, right? I get a notification, hey, it's time to reboot. It's once a month. I reboot every night because it's a laptop. There's no sense in having that thing in a hot, hot bagging it on the way home, right? Because Windows does not do very well when you close the lid. But speaking, so turn it off or reboot it. So it's down to 2 or 3 or 4 minutes. But the question is, why? Why can't that all be done in the background and then it's just as ready to go? It reboots. Does a few, and I know why. There's some things that's got to apply.
Yeah, it's got
zero, level zero or whatever.
But it's coming. That's all coming. It's all coming. Okay. They do it, I think, on Xbox, and they've been doing it on servers, and it's coming to the PCs now, where updates will be applied in the background. And you see, you're a good user. You know, you're one of those ones I'd be happy to have on in the company, right? And our company, people will turn off the monitor and think that's rebooting the PC.
Right.
Or they would press the sleep button and say, I reboot every night. And all they're doing is closing the lid and opening the lid. And that's where we run into problems of you have to actually reboot. Yeah. Right. So,
No, I know. Hey, if you were thinking about, so the average guy for the most part, right? And you were thinking back to the OpenClaw Hermes discussion and somebody listening here, like, they haven't tried this yet. You and I are kind of on the edge, right? This is early. We're going to laugh about these kinds of days. And the problem is it'll get neutered, mostly neutered as it gets more popular because it has to be, right? What's your recommendation? Or now that you've worked on both platforms and you're thinking about people using this, you and I both use it from a home automation standpoint or home assistant standpoint. What's your recommendation on getting started? Like, piece of hardware or how to do it. You're a Docker guy. So run it in a Docker or just give me, if you were going to give some advice to somebody who was thinking about how do I get started on this and why would I want to get started on it? What kind of advice would you give?
You see, it's changing like every week.
That's
like
fine.
you if you asked me this question last week, I would have probably said the best experience I hear people having with this, they're running on like a Mac Mini. It seems to have been developed with
sold them out. Yeah.
And it seemed to be developed with that first in mind in a way where, that was the best experience I heard from people was on the Mac Mini. Now, since then, you can install it on Windows, you can install it on Linux, you can install it on so many things and it will run. It just, don't spend any money. Try and find hardware you have. And just have it run on that because it's not really doing any hard processing on the computer unless you have it doing tasks that needs a GPU or something like that, right? But it can run on older hardware too and try and just get into it cheap and play with it. And if you find the value in it, then you can invest some money in it.
Yeah. It's kind of an anti-crypto, not in the way like it's against crypto, but crypto started with this. Like you need a little bit of power and then it got more power and more power and more power where OpenClaw or Hermes really comes at it from your power is going to be in the cloud, so to speak, with as you're attaching to these LLMs. I have a 10-year-old laptop that I'm running it on and it runs just fine. Like I took one of Sarah's, I think it's 8 years old, little Core i5 from eight years ago, 250 gig of, hard drive space and 16 gig of RAM. Works great. In fact, 16 gigs probably with Linux and OpenClaw, you could probably get away with 4 again. Like there's no chance you're putting Windows on that thing for sure. Like that Windows is done on that thing, man. A Linux and OpenClaw, all of a sudden you've got a little automation box, right? You've got something you can start kind of working with. What do you think? What's the easy button on getting started on this thing? What do you think is a project that somebody could start working on right out of the box, so to speak?
Probably the easiest, I guess, I still think is probably the Mac Mini route. But if you have a virtual machine, you can run it on that, and that gives it a little bit more power. Yeah. But if you're a Docker container person, you can throw Hermes in a container and get that up and going really pretty easily. I have it documented well. I can spin up an agent and follow 10 steps and it's pretty much ready to go for me, right? And when you're looking at Docker containers, because you had me curious, I'm looking at like how much memory they are using. And each agent, the biggest agent is probably using 326 megabytes. Mm-hmm. Right, of memory. So I mean, it really doesn't use a lot of memory. So each of my agents are using that much memory, and this server has a lot of memory. So I have nothing to worry about. But it doesn't need much memory, much processing, especially when it's just sitting there.
Home assistant's a no-brainer. I was gonna say to you, you know, you said it almost killed your home assistant. And you had to get it from a backup. I actually had it spin up its own version of Home Assistant. So I was like, I'm going to install this. You're going to take it over. And from the very beginning had it. Now, again, it's not in this case, OpenClaw is not doing this. It's the LLM associated with it that's doing the work. But from the very beginning, I had OpenClaw involved in the building of the Home Assistant. And that worked a lot better. The very first version, I didn't do that. On the second version, I did that. And it was such a better experience to bring it in from the very beginning, to have it own it, so to speak, to have it understand in its memory. You know, what's crazy, it just makes a million markdown files. Like the whole database is markdown files, right? Basically. I found spinning that up in Home Assistant was one of those, having it spin up its own Home Assistant was kind of the way to go with it. I don't know. Your thoughts on that? Was that smart or was it?
No, it's always good. So when I spin up a new agent, first thing I do is introduce myself. sorry. And then I give that agent its purpose. So I said, this is what you are an expert as that, and this is what we are going to be working with. And like my home assistant agent, that one's Homie. That's all I said. I go, you are a home assistant expert. Here's the keys to home assistant. Save it to your tools because you'll need to connect into it. My name's Gavin, I'd like you to know these type of things. And then I said, connect to my home assistant and confirm it works. And it did. And I go, okay, now scan my home assistant and just understand what I have in there. Right. And update your memories with everything. So now we can talk about this home assistant instance. And it went off and it did its thing. And it looked at all my devices and all my namings and rooms and dashboards and said, okay, I understand where we're at now. And, you know, what would you like to do first? And then we go from there.
Yeah. See, I went the other way. I avoided the agents. And
yeah.
In the introduction, I'm like, I want you to be super safe. I don't want you to do anything without my permission. Yep. I don't want you to totally lock down. And then the very first thing I did was spend time locking it down. So like, I was like, okay, I want you to run a complete security audit on the laptop. It's on a laptop. Run a complete security audit, lock everything down. I don't want you getting out. It's not attached to anything except the internet, right? Like I want you locked down. And I still don't really have, I'm creating a skill that's an agent, that's sort of like an agent, but it's a content manager. It's helping me with, it's eventually going to consume all of the posts at theaverageguy.tv, right?
Yeah.
This is another thing, you know, you're thinking like, oh, I don't really do home assistant. Well, if you've got web content at all or a YouTube channel that you have, like anything with an API, you can kind of attach it to and say, figure this out. It wasn't really for me. I didn't go about the approach, Gavin, of telling it to figure it out. I gave it that attached to it. And then I kind of told it, this is what I want you to get for me and understand these sensors. So I think I came at it from a little bit more of a developmental approach as opposed to letting it discover some things. I should try that, to be honest with you. I haven't really done the full agent approach where I've been like, hey, go figure stuff out. This is what I want you to do. Don't go awry on me, so to speak. So maybe I need to try a full agent on something.
Yeah. I just find I got to guide it sometimes to get it the right information. So like my lawn agent, I call him Turf. He basically, I have funny names for mine.
I love it.
He also has Home Assistant access, but the reason he uses it is he has access to all my soil moisture sensors, soil temperature sensors, my weather station, you know, all that stuff. And I basically say to it, I say, all right, connect to Home Assistant. Can you find all the sensors? And it's like, yep, I got all the information I need. And I'll say, so what's the soil moisture looking like? And it'll be like, oh, zone one is looking a little low. Do you want me to trigger watering there? It will probably take 15 minutes. I can, you know, get it back up. And you're like, sure, do it. And my ratio kicks in and it starts watering, right? So I gave it the context. In the mornings, he'll debrief me on, you know, today's looking a little dry. You might want to just run your sprinklers for a little bit. Or rain's coming tomorrow. It will handle that. Or throw down seed. And anytime I do something along, I'll be like, ah, today I mowed. And it's like, okay, great to know you mowed today. You know, like, it could probably figure that out if I get access to my cameras. It would see me going around with the mower and stuff.
Are you talking to it or are you typing it in?
I type it in. I'm still typing. I haven't hooked it up to any voice thing, you know, or anything like that. But I'll just type it in. I'll be like, yeah, I mowed today. And there you go. And he'll be like, okay, great. You know, now your grass is at, mow it at this height. It'll tell me the height.
This is Hermes that's doing this for you.
Yes. So this, yeah, this is Hermes and with my agent. So like, that's what I do with a lot of my agents. I feed them all the context I can. And I just throw information on it and let it store it. So that when I ask it for things or it needs to know things, it has access to everything it needs.
Yeah. When you trigger, like, okay, so those getting advice, this is the area, because I didn't go agent first. I don't get a lot of advice back. I've been having to build my own reports. Just today I said, hey, when I say status, this is what I want you to do. Because I found it was doing, like, every time it did it, it was doing it differently. You know, I'm like, no. Don't make it up. Like there's something I'm specifically looking for when I say status. So now whether I'm coming through Telegram or I'm going into the web chat, I can say status. And I finally built this structure, so to speak. So it does the same thing. This has, I think, been a fundamental problem with AI is, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier with Claude, and it's happening in OpenAI. They're making back-end changes on the way it thinks. And so you have to kind of think, and listen, you have Gavin as a service, right? You're used to writing code, right? We wrote code that did exactly the same thing every time we executed it. That's not what AI does, right?
Yes.
And so we got to separate engineering tasks and AI tasks. And if you think AI, like, if you wanted to put your lawn on a watering schedule, you wouldn't use AI for that because it may change that schedule all the time, right? You'd write code for that schedule, right? Or am I wrong?
Oh, no, I have a Home Assistant code, but if I want it to just kick it off, if it sees that, hey, your lawn is, you know, needs some water here, I want it to ask me, let me know and ask me if it wants to water it, right? I don't make it do anything really automatic like that because who knows, 1 o'clock in the morning, it kicks off a zone for 10 hours. I don't want to be in that situation. So
why not? Why wouldn't you? That's the best time to water it. Like,
well, then for 10 hours, I could see something like that happening. But yeah, you got to be, I am a little careful with mine. Some people throw it at, you know, and just say, I want you to do this, but I'm like, no. The automated stuff is a lot more reporting to me. Like, one of my agents will check my YouTube video and report all new views or comments or stuff like that every morning to me, you know, and give me in a structure. Now with Hermes, what's nice about it is after it does a task, it goes through this how can I explain it? Like a self-learning like step where it says, all right, let me think about what we just did for future reference. I can save it to my memory and so that we can do this faster next time and do it the same way. And it will update its memory and stuff. So that's where Hermes kind of excels because it reevaluates what it just did and does it better the next time. It learns from its mistakes too.
Yeah. Yeah. Although maybe it would learn from a 10-hour watering mistake by saying, like,
that's an expensive mistake. No,
I know it is. No, I get it. Your water is a little more expensive than ours, but the, you know, I sometimes, yeah, you know, we as humans, I've left the water on. I mean, turned the water on, gone to bed, and then had Sarah nudge me and like, I hear the water running. And I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Right?
I forgot. I've done it.
Why are we okay with that with humans? But the AI can't make a mistake like that and learn from it. I mean, you know, doesn't that seem a little like,
yeah, it's weird.
That the AI, I mean, this is the thing. Like, if we're going to get to this spot and it's going to make a mistake and you'd be like, hey, last night you ran the water for 10 hours. Why did you do that? Well, I fell asleep. That it didn't fall asleep, but there would be a reason behind it. And then it learns from it. I mean, it happens to you. You've done it before.
I go when a mistake is made, I go easier on myself than I do others.
Of course you do.
So it's like, oh, I made that mistake. Oh, well, I'll learn from that, not do it again. Yeah, no, but if my agent made that, it was a lot of four-letter words I'd be typing in that day.
Yeah, it's funny how we don't cut it as much slack. You know, we do expect, I mean, here this, it's a toddler in a lot of ways, right?
Yes.
It's a toddler and we're teaching it some things. It's going to get better. Do you have, like, as you think about this 2 years from now, think about Hermes and what you're hoping for 2 years from now. What's it not doing today that you're hoping for 2 years from now, do you think?
Being reliable. I just want to get to a point where it's, reliable, you know, it's already understanding what we want and stuff like that. But I mean, just, we need it to be fully reliable. So it will know, hey, this never may not be a great idea.
Is that full? Is that reliable? Is never make a mistake?
It should never make a mistake, or at least be able to identify the mistake it's about to make and prompt you for it, saying, hey, I'm about to buy this stock. I don't think this is a great idea. But if you want me to, I think I'll go ahead.
We're more than just watering lawns. I get
what it's like I want it to know, like, because it has a lot more information. It processes a lot better than we do, right? So when it's about to do something, it has all this information. It should know I shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like we know, don't touch the hot pot. We've learned that. Yeah.
Or so. I watered for 10 hours and now that was $25 that I'm going to pay on my water bill. Right?
Exactly.
That's pain, right?
But my pain, I try to pass along to somebody else to say, don't touch that pot. Trust me. You know,
they got at that point. I think we need to build pain into these AI. If we're going to hold them to accountability, right?
True.
There's got to be some kind of pain. Whatever that is, right? Whatever
pain or punishment or something like that it fears to not make a mistake.
For sure.
Possibly.
Like, I mean, you know, in the military, you know, there were moments I wanted to sleep and I didn't because I was afraid like that somebody was going to catch me sleeping, right? That's kind of this cause and effect kind of thing.
Yeah.
And today, the AI has no cause and effect. It only has cause. And so it just does, and it does, and it doesn't care. You said this earlier. It was like, my bad.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, sorry, my bad. I didn't know. And I've had some moments. It's getting better, by the way. I think I'm getting less and less of those, my bad. You know. And by the way, I think those my bad moments are caused by the restriction in memory. Like if AI could have unlimited memory, or let's just say more, it doesn't make as many mistakes. So in OpenClaw, you get this crazy small memory.md. It's a markup file that keeps kind of the core purposes. When you start it and you say those things about you, stores it in memory.md. When you start working with it and all the important things that you're doing, stores it in memory.md. For whatever reason, the dude who made this thing said it can only be 12,000K or something along those lines. What, 12,000 meg? I forget what it is, but it's small, whatever it is. And I filled that thing up. Like I filled it up and it went over. I had 28. It gets 12. I got 28. And it's like, it's starting to, like, so the stuff on the bottom doesn't get considered. It only gets the first 12. And I'm like, well, like, what good is the file? Like, if it's not, shouldn't it like be bleeding that off into other things? Right. So I really, really wonder, right? I think there's two limiting factors, the quality of the LLM that you're using. We've mentioned that already. And then two, freaking memory, things it can remember. If you remember LLMs 2 years ago, they didn't remember anything. Like you'd have a chat with them and they'd be like, yeah, I got nothing. I don't remember a thing you said 10 minutes ago. Now that's getting better. But I think the key to all of this, and as you're thinking about building, you know, building out both Hermes or building out Hermes now, do you think there's some opportunities? I mean, does it really come down to memories on this thing and what it can remember and for how long and consider?
Yeah, on Hermes, it will compress the memories and reorganize them every now and then to make them a little better. And I guess it will just remove the fluff that doesn't need to know if it just needs to know the important stuff. And it works a lot better. But in regards to that, that's why you have different agents and agents that specific on your lawn, because that agent only needs to know about stuff about your lawn. And that's all it's in its memory. If you have one agent that does everything.
The lawn guy is what you're saying. You hire the lawn guy.
Yeah. If you have an agent that does everything, then he has a lot of memories to store. So that's why I break them up into very specific agents that are specific. Brilliant. Yeah.
Gavin, that you taught you. Okay. This is my takeaway from our conversation, because I've been developing and not really. I have not. I don't have lawn agents and some of those kinds of things. I have turned my Open Claw over to a soul. It's basically a power and solar agent, right?
Yeah,
that's its primary purpose. Now it does some other things in the background as well, but I like that. So and then so you're spinning up a Docker, a new Hermes instance for every single agent that you're doing. So Turf. What are the other ones that you have?
I have Turf. I have my pool agent. I call him Skimmer. my financial agent is Cashanova.
Okay, whoa. You're turning money over to these guys?
No, he doesn't handle money or anything. But I do scan my documents or send him pictures of my financial documents and say, you know, how does my retirement look? And, you know, where can I improve? And I shared that idea with a friend of mine. And he called me like a couple days later and he said, the agent found me $1,500 that I didn't have. Like, I didn't claim or something like that. He's like, that already made me some money. If I looked through my financial stuff and it told me, right. So like, again, if you talk to it properly, give it the explanations, it knows what to do. Right.
Was that Open Claw or was that Hermes that he was using?
Hermes, because he also switched over to Hermes too. Okay. But in the end, I was running these same agents on Open Claw as well.
Okay.
So it can be done on both of them.
Did you use the old Open Claw ones to train the Hermes ones?
Yes.
Going forward?
Okay. So all I did was I took the Open Claw data files and I put them in the workspace of the Hermes. Yeah. And I said, I had you were alive in Open Claw before. Here's your data structure. Yeah. Import everything you need to import and you assume that identity. And it went through all the files and brought over everything. And I was like, done. They said there's a command line to import it, but I didn't like it didn't work for me, so I just made it import everything.
No, that's cool. Frick, now I'm gonna have to I had kind of given up on Hermes. I was like, it's too hard for me, but maybe it's easier now. Maybe it's easier. Well, and I have a pretty powerful box that I leave off most of the time now because it's burns 100 watts and like it's a gaming rig. It's got it just does its thing. But if I had if I had five agents running on that thing in their own VMs, right, that would be
in their own containers. You don't need a lot of power though, keep that in mind. Run with very little power.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things, so thinking about this, I don't know how you've gotten around this. So I have the OpenAI OAuth that I'm using. It's a $20 plan with OpenClaw, and I'm imagining Hermes. You can connect via OpenAI is okay if you use their OAuth and not the API, right? To connect to that, you know, OAuth is the $20 a month. API is use as you go, just
per token.
To be clear, right? Between that, you can rack up some bills on the API piece, but now I forgot I was going to ask. It'll come back here in just a second because I have an old brain.
Small memory.
The OpenAI, the OAuth. Oh, I built a little bit of a router. There's there's free and cheap, really. Well, there's free API connections at places like Llama, and trying to think, who else do I have that connected to? Doesn't matter. There's other services where you can get a, they're not very good. They're pretty rudimentary, right? But they're good enough for some basic stuff. And so I built a router in OpenClaw to say, hey, for the easy stuff, don't be going to OpenAI to run easy stuff. That's burning tokens. You know, still in my OAuth implementation, I still have a limit. It's not unlimited, right? It still has a limit. How'd you get around? I mean, I'm burning through those tokens pretty fast. Is that just because OpenClaw's a hog and is sucking up all those, sucking up all this? Is Hermes any better at that?
Hermes is has been a little better. So all my Hermes agents, I have 11 of them, and they all run off of OpenAI stuff. Mm. And I have not hit a limit yet. But when I'm doing coding, I use Claude.
Right.
So they don't interact. I mean, the problem with Claude is they kept changing their pricing model. Like, 1 minute you could use OAuth, and they're like, no, you can't use the OAuth. They came back and they said, oh, you can use the OAuth now. But then I think the middle of this month they're going to say, oh no, it's going to be a different bucket now again.
Super restricted.
And it really gets annoying. And, you know, like, it's probably one of the better ones, but it's also the most, not the most stable one when it comes to what we're doing, right? So because of how I interact with my agents and stuff, I don't really hit the limits anymore because I don't have them generating tons of code in my agents. I'm just talking to them and they're just doing things.
And when you say talking, you're typing to
them. Typing.
No, right on. Right. And you could. There's plugins that would.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that.
Okay, so maybe that's the difference, is you're going, you know, you're taking an agent and you're saying, hey, here's the API to this specific thing. I want you to control these things. And then you're saying, start to learn on this stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my next step, is to create a separate instance somewhere and say, I'm going to lock it down, and then I'm going to say, I want you to start as an agent. And I want you to do these things, and I want you to learn in this process. Do you think that's how I would get going?
Yeah. And every time I get an agent started up for the first time, I have a conversation with it. Like, that's how I've changed. I don't assume it knows anything.
Yeah.
I have a conversation. I say, okay, this is your role. Do you have any questions for me? And it comes back with a whole bunch of questions. And you're like, great, this is a great starter right here. And we start banging out the answers, and by the end of all the Q&A and everything like that, we have our goals. We know what it's responsible for, we know what I expect of it, we know what it has access, it knows what it has access to, and what it will get from each one. And, you know, that, like, almost like introductory conversation sets the stage for it, and then going forward it's a lot better interaction. So one of my agents I do the most work with, this was an experiment at first. When I first jumped into it, this was a big experiment for me. His name was Sarge, right? And he was a fitness agent, you know? I was like, all right, you're Sarge. You're going to be my fitness agent. What do you need to know? And we went through everything, goals, eating habits, times, everything, right? And it basically, it didn't generate like an eating plan for me. It just like told you habits, and it generated a workout plan for me and how to adjust it as time went on. Right. So it said, oh, this one's hard for you. Well, do it like this and we'll adjust it again later on, type of things. Right. And it worked around everything. Like I said, I only have an hour in lunchtime. That's when I want to do my workout, you know? And we have a lot of conversations. It checks up on me. It's tied to my home assistant too, because I have a WeThing scale. So when I step on the scale, later on it reads the value and it knows everything, you know, it tracks the progress and stuff, right? And it checks in on me every, like, many times a day. So say, what's for breakfast?
Okay, hold on. When you say, right? It checks in on you, like, how does it check in on you?
Well, how do you connect to your agents to talk to them? Are you using Telegram or?
No, I'm using the web for OpenClaw, I'm using the web chat mostly.
Okay.
But I do have a Telegram agent that's assigned to it, so I could talk to it that way if I wanted to.
Okay, so I use something called Mattermost because it's a self-hosted on my Unraid and it's very closed off. It's like the only ones in there are me and my agents.
It's like Telegram, but just yours.
Yes, it's just me and my agents in there, and they connect in there, and we talk through Mattermost, right? So in the mornings, it pings me. It'll say, what's for breakfast? What's the plan? And it will criticize me because I told it to be hard. It'll criticize what I've done, or it will boost and say, this is great, but it'll also help you plan for your lunch, or it will say, what's the plan for dinner? And it constantly reminds me throughout the day, okay, now's the time to drink some water. So that's why I'm always drinking my water, because I would always forget. But no, he pings me and says, hey, time for another jug of water, right? And it started off as an experiment and became a lot more than that, because I would be going out to dinner with people. And I would say to them, we're going to this restaurant. What? Go check out the menu and tell me what you'd recommend. And it would go online, look up the menus, come back and say, hey, this is what I recommend eating here, blah, blah, blah. You know, if you want to, you know, enjoy something a little more, I recommend this. It would give me a full breakdown. Yeah. And it's been that one I use the most, probably. I interact with probably the most, just because he's constantly pinging me. But in the 2 months I've been working with him, I lost like 20 pounds in those 2 months. Great. Right?
Congrats.
So, you know, it just keep going. I'm just going to, like, it's habits now. So it just keeps going. But he still bugs me multiple times a day.
I love it. Well, what you've helped me to realize in this, like, I heard these stories and I was like, scared to death this thing was going to take over. And so from the very beginning, I've locked this thing down. And then I actually use the web version of ChatGPT to help me manage these things or manage this instance of OpenClaw. And it's been very suspicious of it. Like, it's been like, hey, don't, you know, in fact, there's times it's like, we've done enough. Like, don't do any more. It's also very code heavy. I've been sending a lot of code to it. Not the dialogue that you're talking about, not letting it do its thing, but really restricting it. A lot of the prompts I give it, I'm wondering if this thing is going to rebel against me because I'm so restrictive of it. Like, the stuff I sent to it just today, we were working on getting something, doesn't matter what it is, but I was working on a project on it and it was being super restrictive. It was giving it these big, long commands of like, do this and only this. And I kind of wonder if that's okay if you want like traditional software development patterns done on it of getting it exactly the way you want it, like I did with my status. Now when I say status, it gives me exactly the format I need.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like you've come an approach from the very beginning of giving it some autonomy and saying, hey, you do your thing. We're going to interact in this way. You do your thing. You teach me, and I'm gonna give you some feedback. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I give it what I expect.
Yeah,
and I say this is what I want. You know, like, and how you do it is up to you. But this is the output I want, and go off and do it. And then it comes with the output, and I have more conversations with it than I do trying to instruct it how to do things. Because if I tell it how to do things, that's how I know how to do it.
Right, right.
There is a better way out there. And a lot of times it comes back with the better way. And I even look at its code sometimes. I'm like, wow, I never would have thought of doing it that way. Or I didn't know it was possible to do it that way. Or it would suggest the language to do it in. And I'll say, I'd like it in the Bash script, right? And it would say, no, Python's better for this. And it would go do a Python version. And I'd be like, yeah, you're probably right because of the scraping and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
do you approve all the software it has to install when it's doing those? Because it doesn't have it all natively. There's times I get approval notices like, hey, I'm going to do this thing. Are you okay with this? Do you approve all those?
I review what it's doing. Yeah, I review what it's doing because it'll ping me and say I'm about to delete all these files. And then before I approve, I say, what are the files? And then I'll look at the list and I'll be like, yeah, no problem. Go ahead and I'll approve it. And but I do because it's asking for a reason, right?
Yeah.
I do approve it.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna go Hermes. I'm going to go with the Hermes agent. I'm going to not treat it. I'm not going to be such a strict person like I've been with OpenClaw, because I've been super restrictive on OpenClaw. Like, it is, I've been like, you're not going to get out of hand. What, any recommendations on what I should start with first? Like, what agent should I build first? What do you think is the right agent to go with first, or does it just depend on me?
I always started with my generic AI assistant, right? So his name was Cursor, and I just have him. He's my generic one. I can ask him all sorts of things, but as soon as I find like a very specific a task that I'd like to, you know, talk about on a more lengthy thing, I'll spin up another agent and give him like, you're my pool agent now. So when I take a water sample, I'll show you the sample and you can advise what needs to be adjusted and by how much. This is the size of my pool. This is the equipment I have. I would send it pictures of the equipment and it would be like, okay, you got this pump, you got this filter, you got this, you got that. This is your heater, you know, and it knows the size of my pool and everything. And it knows I have steps and a diving board and where the jets are. So it advises everything. It will be like, okay, now you want to aim the jets upwards or downwards, depending on what we're doing in the pool for cleaning it and stuff like that. Or, you know, like it would say, hey, you know, maybe you should clean it, go check all the filters today. Or at my pool pressure, I now have a pool pressure sensor tied into Home Assistant. So it would look at the pressure on my pool filter and it would say, hey, maybe you want to go backwash your pool filter. The pressure is a little high right now, right? Stuff like that, right? So giving it access to information from sensors and Home Assistant gives it more power to advise you to do things too. So that's where that comes into play.
Okay. I'm realizing I've not given my AIs enough autonomy because, listen, I created a storm advisor, right? Yep. This would be like, hey, so I've given it National Weather Service information. I've given it NOAA information, some of the local things that are going on around here. Like we can't get access to our electricity grid information that way. So I have to say, well, yep, let's treat my plugs as the grid. If the plugs go down, if these three plugs go down, the house is offline. Like that's all that really matters anyways. Doesn't matter what our electrical company is reporting. What's important is what's here. But I'm still pretty restrictive of it. You know, it's not really giving me that advice, so to speak. So I'm kind of realizing maybe I've been too mean to my...
also ask it. I sometimes ask, I go, what do you need to be able to perform this task for me?
It
would tell me, I need this key, I need the website that gives you this information, I need this, and you give it to it, and it all commits it to its memory and everything, and then it can go out and do what it needs to do.
I think it's the web client of ChatGPT that's holding me back. It wants to be super, it's a boss.
It's possible, it's possible.
It's like, no, you should definitely, it's told me that several times, you should definitely not let this thing do this thing. Like, you should definitely, we need to test this. We need to prove it out. You need to let me boss it. I'm kind of wondering if I got a bossy web agent on the ChatGPT side of things. I'm gonna have
to. You're going from one agent to another.
Maybe. But this is interesting all in itself is having, and it's ChatGPT on both sides, just to be clear, right? It's the same company, right, doing this thing. One is the web client that I pay $20 for. The other is a web client that I pay $20 for. It's the same thing, right? I mean, you're like, they're, you know, and I wonder if one is being a little bossy to the other because I'm not having the experience that you're having. You know, I'm not talking to it. I'm not having conversations with it. And I wonder, the very first version I started with, I was having conversations with it and it committed suicide. So I'm kind of wondering if it's me.
Don't want to know what you told it, but okay.
I wonder if it's me. Maybe I set the expectations too high. Gavin, how is this changing things over at hometech.fm? I mean, are you talking about Hermes and OpenClaw? Is that fitting in? I mean, it's such an important part of the home automation space. Is it coming up in
conversation? Oh, we talk about it. Yeah. All the time. It's like part of the show, we have our project section, right? And in the project section, we're always talking about maybe something we found with AI or something new we're doing with AI or, you know, stuff like that, right? It's a big topic. Even in our Slack channel, when you're a Patreon member, you get invited to our Slack channel and we have an AI channel in there. And we'll share news in there or others will share what they're doing with it. You know, like some people are doing tests of different models and they'll report back with, hey, I found this model works better than this model. It is a big conversation there. I do find there's a group of people that just have no care for AI. They don't want it. They don't care for it.
It's okay.
And that is okay. I just think it's going to it's going to be in our lives that you have to be like,
yeah,
there, sort
of,
you know,
sort of. I think we alluded to this earlier with the Microsoft. Like, I think it's going to come in and get so watered down and so controlled. It just, yes, it will have new functionality and it'll be able to do amazing things. And like, but it to, for the general population to be able to accept it, it's going to have a lot of control.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think like we are definitely on the fringe, my friend. Like there's no doubt. Oh, we're doing some things. One of the experiments I did with a version of it was to say, could I run an OpenClaw instance completely on local LLMs? Right now, I don't have I have a 3060 Ti, you know, GPU, not very powerful. It was okay back in the day. I mean, it's not great, but it'll do some things, right? I mean, it's 8 gigs, so it'll, or eight, yeah, 8 gigs. So it'll run some of those models. And you know what? Works. And the goal was, I was afraid at some point these big expensive models weren't going to be available to us anymore. Like, you'd have to pay the big dollars. And I was like, could I run a local instance? Or actually, the real question is, what could I run on a local instance of having local LLMs? Because I do think we may be moving into a world where some of the what we have access to now, you and I have access to ChatGPT 5.5, the frontier version, the best version. We're paying $20. That's not going to last very long.
No.
You know? So I was like, what do we do when the bubble bursts? It's what I've been thinking. And where ChatGPT says, or OpenAI says, you know what? Just kidding. You know, you no longer have access to that. So I've been kind of thinking, how do we make local LLMs work?
You know, and to help you out there, there's a website somebody developed called caniRun.ai. And basically you select your GPU, the memory and everything like that, and it tells you the experience you have with the models. So I looked up it's an RTX 3060 Ti, 8 gigabyte. The Llama 3.1 8B, you'll have a good experience, you know, that. You'll get about 68 tokens per second, right? Yep. But after that, like the other models, you're getting into lower, like you'll have Qwen 2.5 Coder, but it's only the 1.5B version. So it'll run great and you'll get 241 tokens per second. But as you get into the bigger, better models, it's not going to work on that one, not on that video card. So it gives you the experience that you're going to have when you run these models. And it gives you a score, a speed. And I tested this against my cards and it was pretty bang on.
Okay. So, what's the name of it again? Tell me the name of it.
CanIRun.ai.
CanIRun.ai. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I have the OSS, the GPT OSS 20B is what I have found worked the best on that box that I'm running. And it's an older model, but it seems to work out pretty well for me in that space.
It says with that model, you're only going to get 7 tokens per second. It says it barely runs. So.
No, it actually runs pretty well for me. Yeah,
The 20B
for the easy stuff, right? That's what I'm, and there's other models in there and, you know, as such, but it certainly is, man, I tell you what, there's so much happening in this space. It's hard to keep track of it all.
Yes.
Hard to keep track of it all. Well, I told you we talked the whole time. I do want to ask you one more question. You had a fun, because this audience that I have loves hard drives. You recently had a hard drive experience. So talk, as we close it up here, talk a little bit about your experience with Western Digital.
So in my home servers, I have all Western Digital drives. They're all the red drives. And I use it with Unraid. And I just like to have them for their warranties and stuff. Well, one of them died and, you know, I always keep a spare backup. I threw out the old drive and I sent it into Western Digital under warranty. Now, last time I did this was last year, a year before, I sent it a drive and within the week I had a new drive on my doorstep, right? Like I was shocked at how fast I was happy and that's why I stuck with Western Digital. Well, I sent it to them and they're like, yeah, we got it. And then I didn't hear from them for a month. So then I contacted them and they're like, yeah, we have no more drives to give out right now. You're going to have to wait. So Western Digital, I know they announced that they gave all their drives away to AIA factories for 2026, and they had no more left. So I don't know the drive they eventually sent me. I don't know where that's come from or what computer they pulled it out of. But it was about 3 or 4 months later, they eventually, one showed up on my door and I got the replacement drive. So if right now you're buying drives because of their warranty, I don't know how good that warranty is going to be, because a lot of these companies don't want to give you the drive.
Yeah.
You know, they give it to the AI people and they don't have any stock left. So you don't know what drive you're getting. Like, yeah, it wasn't a new drive. Right. I can tell you it wasn't a new drive, but I don't know where it came from.
Did you run Crystal Disk against it to see what kind of hours were on it before you?
No, I didn't run.
They possibly cleared it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, one of my friends, Richard Gunther, right, he's also in our Slack channel too. Yeah. He had a spare drive, same size, sitting around. He's like, I got one here if you want, and he sent it to me.
Oh, right.
Nice. So that was nice of him. I was so happy because I have my backup. I have my backup drive back in business now. So I always have a backup drive. So when one fails, I don't stress.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have a Chia instance here. It's all hard drive. So I have 105 terabytes of space literally sitting right now. It's off. Like, they're getting ready to go through they have a new plot that's coming for that. And I may or may not go with it. I'm still trying to, like, do I turn that thing back on? Here's the thing, Gavin. Like, during the pandemic, I was running 600 or 700 watts continuously out of the studio here. Like, easy, and all the stuff that I was running. As I went to solar and I started thinking about, like, what I was actually burning, I've gotten that down to like 75. You know, and I'm starting to see the power bill hasn't changed yet because I just started kicking off next fall. But this fall, the power bill will cut over to the new budget amount, and I'm kind of addicted to it. Like, I'm like, do I need to be running these hard drives full speed all the time? You know? And so I've got, I have so much hard drive space that's just sitting there empty. So as you're talking about this, I'm like, oh, I should have probably offered a drive to you as well.
It's all good.
But I may spin that back up. I'm thinking I may use OpenClaw in the new plotting. So I may, I'm going to try Hermes. Certainly this weekend will be Hermes.
Just say you'll spin up an agent. You'll spin up an agent.
There we go. I will spin up an agent, and the goal would be learn everything you can about this, and then apply it here, and then plot these drives to the best, like, whatever. Maybe this is the spot for agents. I don't want to be in the race. I just want to know what's best and do it. Like, I don't want to have to do all that thinking. So maybe I'll turn the agent into we'll give it a Chia agent. We'll make it a Chia agent, and we'll have it, like, know everything there is to know about Chia, and then say, what's the best thing to do? You know,
you're not the only person thinking this, Jim.
No, that's for sure.
Is there somebody out there prepping their agents for Chia? So
that's for sure.
You'll probably find it.
It is the disadvantage that I've put myself in, which you've been doing this with Hermes and OpenClaw. You've been in the community. I haven't as much. I've kind of been learning all this stuff on my own. And the community stresses me out. You know, I get into the community and then I start jumping around all over the place, listening to different people, and I'm like, I don't actually get anything done. I've gotten some stuff done on my own, so I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
I'm like you. I really don't like listening to community. Sometimes, you know, there's somebody that takes it to the extreme and you're like, that's really cool, but they spent so much time on that. I don't have that type of time for that, right? I'll never get to that point. And then there's other people with their advice of stuff that works for them. And I'm like, great, that works for you. You know, like, awesome. I like to get my hands dirty and learn it and figure it out what's best for me. And this is where I'm at now with it.
Super. Hey, what's going on at hometech.fm? What's coming up, or what? Why should folks go over there and listen?
Oh, there's so many reasons to go over there and listen. I mean, the fact that we do it weekly, you know, we don't take time off.
I'm sorry. I used to not either, but lately I don't have a co-host. So, you know, that's how it goes.
But yeah, every week we cover the latest news and we cover projects we've been working on. And we got a lot of projects going. And sometimes the projects are technical, sometimes they're not technical. So they're all over the place. We, you know, it's just a glimpse into our life. And, you know, like, I'll drop it here because there's a video of me falling in the pool. So, you know.
What happened?
So last year I was closing the pool and I had my headphones on, and I'm pulling the cover on, and I had my Sonos headphones on, and yeah, just one misstep and then I fell into the pool, and the pool is lower at that point, and everything like that. So you know, I'm hanging off the edge of the pool and like my ankle's in the water, and I'm like, it's like I can't lift myself out of this. So I'm like, the only thing I could do is just fall into the pool and swim across to the shallow end, and then I can get out. I just took the ladder off too. I was so pissed off. And yeah, so my neighbor came home that day. It's a lot. My neighbor came home that day and he was having the worst day ever. And I felt so bad for him. I go, "You think you had a bad day?" I go, "I fell in the pool," and I showed him the video footage and everything. And he instantly cheered right up. Right? He's like, he stopped complaining about his day. He bugged me for probably a week to send him the video, and I just got fed up of it. And I sent him the video, and within 5 minutes, he sent the video to all my friends that we have in common. So I was like, awesome, right? Like, yeah, I was like jerking, you know. I was like, people messaging me. I'm like, what are they messaging me about? Oh, they saw the video, you know. No one asks, you know, how are you doing? They're always, they laugh first, right? No one is like, oh, are you okay? Yeah. You know, was it cold? It was 15 degrees in the pool. So yeah, when TJ came to visit last month or so, he met John, and first thing John said is, here, let me send you this video. So then TJ got a hold of it, and then on the Home Tech podcast, TJ said, "Yeah, we got a video of Gavin falling in the pool. If you want it, we'll give it to anyone that pledges $20 on Patreon." And yeah, we got a $20 pledge. So
nice.
Money, you know. So there's a video out there. If you pledge $20 to our Patreon, me falling in the pool is always entertaining.
Maybe that's what
full
I need to
close
do.
Everything.
Maybe I need to come up with a video that's only on Patreon.
So that's one thing. I mean, we talk AI, we talk tech, we talk news, we talk all sorts of things. It's fun over there.
Yeah, we say it all the time. Check it out, hometech.fm. It's like this show, but better. That's just what I'm going to say. It's like this show, but better.
It's a different agent in the space. That's all.
Yeah, this is the goof around show. That's just every once in a while. I feel bad. I took 3 weeks off, but I had a lot of work to do. So for some reason, the work has gotten crazy over the last 6 months. And so it's been a lot busier for me. And I have no problem taking time off. So there's plenty of back content out there. Mike Weger is back next week. Nice. So if you're listening live, I got Uyghur on the show next week. Gavin, thanks for taking the time. I gave you short notice. I think I asked you on Tuesday, like, hey, Uyghur was supposed to be this week. I was going to ask you for next week. Uyghur canceled. He's like, hey, I can't make it. Can you move it? And I'm like, okay. So Gavin, can you join us Thursday? And you're like, yes. So thanks for being
The only reason I said yes so fast was because Montreal got knocked out of the hockey playoffs. Once they got knocked out, you know, we were backing them. Once they got knocked out, I was like, my Thursday just opened up.
You said I canceled everything.
No reason to watch these playoffs anymore. Well, you know, I'm supposed to be watching the game right now, but you know, that's not.
It's all right. I am glad you said yes. I wanted to catch up with you on this Open Claw, and then you threw out the Hermes thing. I was like, damn it. Now I'm going to have to try Hermes. You know,
I gave you work.
I got some work to do. It will set me up for a nice, like, I'm kind of building a Open Claw as a content agent. I think that's where it's going to kind of go. And, but I'm thinking like, okay, I need to let one of these agents go from the very beginning and not restrict it down so much. That's what you taught me tonight. Like, you need to come at it, like, set it up. Don't be so restrictive in the beginning, but put it in an environment where it can't get to anything, obviously, right? Type deal. And then give it things to, like, the question I'm going to ask is, what do you need from me?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Can you hang tight while I close this thing up?
For sure.
All right. A couple reminders on the way out. If you want to join the Discord group, you can do that. theaverageguy.tv/Discord. You guys, Home Tech, you guys have an open Discord? Do you have to be Patreon?
We just have a Slack channel for our Patreon members. So, you know, you can sign up for $1, $5, $20. So I'll appreciate that.
You're in the Slack.
And you're in the Slack, and there's a lot of people in there that are in the space.
Okay. So check that out too. But for me, if you want to join that, theaverageguy.tv/Discord. And then don't forget theaverageguy.tv powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from folks that you know and you trust. Of course, that's Christian. He's doing a bang-up job. I was in my WordPress back end just today. I hadn't been in there in a while. It was going super fast. And do you, Gavin, you do WordPress at all? Are you a WordPress guy at all? Have you
not? I've done it in the past, and it's been a while since I actually touched it now. Like if I were to get into it now, I'd just spin up a WordPress agent to do the work for me.
I've given OpenClaw my WordPress API, and I've been busy with other things, but at one point we were doing a whole bunch of hey, can you make this better? WordPress 7, the newest version of WordPress, has a place you can put AI agents in, and you can give it your API key, and then it will help with plugins that are API, that are AI enabled. Who would have thought, right? In WordPress. For the audio folks, Gavin just rolled his eyes.
Look, AI is the buzzword.
It really is. It really is. We are live every Thursday. Well, most Thursdays. Some Thursdays. Let's put it that way. 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. Like I said, Mike Weger will be back next week. It'll be great to catch up with him. Thanks for all of you listening live. Thanks for all of you listening. I saw you earlier. Dan Lefebvre was out there. Joe hung out. Brian checked in a little bit earlier on the live show. You can join us live as well. For everybody listening, thanks for listening. With that, we'll say goodbye.
Geeks, where the screens glow bright and the Wi-Fi peaks. If you're looking for the tech talk you can actually keep, then settle on in with Home Gadget Geeks.